أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وبه نستعين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ونبينا وحبيب قلوبنا وطبيب نفوسنا أبي القاسم محمد وعلى إطرته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين الذين أذهب الله عنهم الرجس وطهرهم تطهيرا
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله Just to recap what we were talking about yesterday, that we need to understand that we have received a precious legacy in the commemoration of Karbala. It is not something we do as a ritual, rather it is a living thing. It is a living thing that brings with it every generation a new crop of Azadar of Hussain alayhi salam. In this generation it is us. We have received this legacy from our forefathers, our fathers. It is now our duty to understand what we have received, live with, see its benefit in our day-to-day lives. And then one more thing remains for us, and that is to pass it on faithfully to our children the way it was passed on faithfully to us. So that we are not guilty of breaking the legacy in any way, damaging the legacy in any way, but we are faithful transmitters of this important legacy. This is waqian a duty, a zimmedari, a responsibility on every community that we look at these young children and we make sure that the azadari that goes on in all its facets, whether it is right from the poetry in the beginning to the matam, to the lectures, are all understood by them, participated in by them, so that in whatever language and whatever means they find it most conducive to commemorate, they should commemorate. And that we should not forget them, the younger generation, because we have understood certain things, we know certain things, it is our duty to teach them these things, so that they also, inshallah, can become Azadar of Hussain alayhi salam. Salawat wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
We have to understand very clearly that we are not disconnected from the event of Karbala. Sometimes this is a mistake we make. We feel it happened, okay, and it is now for us to remember it. And some people say we should learn lessons from it. These are all true things, of course. What I want to try to say is that no, we are part of it. The beautiful thing is we can be part of it. In fact, Mawla wanted us to be part of it, as I alluded to that at the end of the talk yesterday. That a man doesn't say hal min nasirin yansurna just as he is about to be murdered. He doesn't say that. He says it well before. Yet we never find this beautiful statement from Mawla anywhere along the journey. Not in Medina, not on the journey to Makkah and beyond, to Kufa. But we find it, not even on the day of Ashura at the beginning, we find it when he is alone. At that time, he says, "Hal min nasirin yansurna?" Is there somebody who can help me? Is there someone who can aid me? This, Mawla knew, would be something that would travel, that would reach us, that would reach all people for all time. And it was an invitation that you can be part of the Nahza, the movement, the mission that begins here today. It doesn't end here today. It only begins. And that is the constant fight to stand up to injustice, to stand up to wrongdoing, to preserve the pristine teachings of Islam by practicing them, by showing the beauty of them to others. You can be part of this. And this is very, very important that we understand this message. I remember the Maqam-e Muazzam al-Ahbari, the leader of the revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, may Allah give him a long life. In one of the Friday khutbas when I was in Iran, this is going back a few years, he brought that famous story of Bazargan al-Tuti. You know, if that story is known, I don't say it. The story of the parrot and the trader. Everybody knows that story?
No?
It's one of Rumi's stories. And it's good for kids, but it's got a nice moral to it. He was trying to explain that Mawla has sent us a message, but are we receptive to that message or not? And this is a well-known story in Iran, and in any case, Bazargan, there was a man who was a trader. He had a parrot, a special parrot. He could converse with this parrot. Not like a little kasuku I know here in Austin, but a kasuku who can actually speak back and have a conversation with you. So when he was going on his journey, one business, he went to his wife and his daughters and even his servants, and he said, "I'm going there. What do you guys want?" Everybody gave him a little shopping list. In the end, he went to Kasuku and he said to him, or Tuti, "What do you want?" Tuti said, "I want my freedom." He says, "No, I can't let you free. You are my confidant. You are the wisest one to speak with. If I let you free, what will happen to me? But I make a concession. I'll give you a big cage." People sometimes think if you give them a big cage, you see, that will do. For some people, that does, actually. Yeah. So Tuti kept quiet. He said, "Okay." He said, "Where are you going?" He said, "I am going to the place where you come from, Hindustan. You are a bird from Hindustan, I'm going to Hindustan." So that Tuti told him, "Well, if you see anybody like me, any other parrot like me, send them my salam. Say I would love to visit, but I can't get out of this cage. I'm in a cage, but I'm sending you salam by remote." So this Rumi says that this man went, did his business. When he was returning, he got a bit lost in the forest, and when he looked up, he saw lots of big parrots, just like his own parrot, and he remembered the message of his parrot. So he said to them, "Oh parrots, I have one just like you." And he sends a message of salam. "He would like to come and give it to you personally, but I have got him a little bit under lock and key, so he cannot come. But anyway, I do this for him, on his behalf." As he said this, one of the big parrots from above fell down and died. He said, "Oh, it must be his brother." Because, you know. Anyways, he came home. He gave the gifts, then he went to his parrot and he said to him, "Something very odd happened." "So what?" He said, "I saw parrots like you." So the Tuti said, "Did you give them my salam?" He said, "Yes." "But something strange happened." So the Tuti said, "What happened?" "So one of them fell from up and died." On hearing this, his own parrot fell from the perch and died also. Now this Bazargan is saying, "La hawla wa la quwwata." I didn't know they have such delicate hearts, these parrots. And they're dying left, right, and center like this. So he called the servant, he said, "Go bury him." So when they took him away to bury him, he suddenly began to fly again. And he flew on a tree, and then Rumi goes on a long conversation between the Tuti and the man. And he said to him many things, many pieces of last parting advice. But one of the things he told him was, "I understood the message sent by my brother, which was, if you want freedom, play dead." You see, and this is only one of the messages. But Rahbar was saying that Hussein ibn Ali also has sent a message. But are you there to listen? Are you listening? Do you feel that there is something being directed to you by him over the generations, which is personally meant for you in your lifetime? Or are you oblivious of it? If you're oblivious of it, well, fine. We will pay service to Imam Hussein in whatever way we can. But we will never understand that he's saying to us, "Join me now. Be part of this. You can be part of this if you choose to be. Don't be a passive bystander. Be active in my nahzah. Because the work is not done. The work will never be done. They will always be Yazid and his representatives. They will always have to be Hussein and Zainab and their representatives." Salat wa Ibrahim Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
One of the things I want to touch on today, and again in question time, I'm glad there is question time, you may feel free to disagree, is this analysis of the commemoration of Karbala. Is it something that should be done intellectually? Is it something that should be done emotionally? Do we engage with Karbala with our minds? Or should we engage with Karbala with our hearts? Should we spend a lot of time thinking about what Imam Hussain alayhi salam did Or should we need to spend a lot of time weeping over what happened to him? And this is something that is a sensitive topic. But please, you know, bear in mind that I handle it in the way, in the best interest in heart and in my understanding of it. There are people who really believe that the way to commemorate Imam Hussain alayhi salam is to weep and to do matam. And that they say that Imam Hussain alayhi salam, we are giving pursa to Lady Fatima, and we are giving her comfort when nobody gave her comfort. And inshallah wa ta'ala, this will be our salvation. And there are people nowadays, increasingly I see them in London, they don't do matam. In fact, when matam is going on, they fold their hands. This is very rude behavior, I feel, but they do that to show that you people are only doing matam. You people are only artificially mourning. None of you is thinking of applying the lessons that Imam alayhi salam died for. And so this continues to be something that people do in different ways, and we need to understand that. We need to try to chart our own route through this. I believe that intellect is our single most powerful tool. But if we need to connect with something, truly connect, we cannot do it with our intellect alone. If we are to connect and make a long-standing, strong, long-lived and strong commitment to anything, whether it is to our potential spouse, whether it is to an idea, whether it is to Rasulullah, whether it is to another personality, I don't believe it can happen with the mind. It has to have a component of the heart. When the heart is engaged in something, then there is a pleasure in that activity. When the mind is engaged with something, or when the mind forms a connection with something, there is a sense of duty in it. There may not be any joy. To make it clearer, for example, I look sometimes, I remember my grandparents, especially I remember my grandmother, may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala bless her. I remember that when I was young, she taught me namaz. And she used to recite some surahs between Maghrib and Isha. And especially when I was, trying to be quick about it, I would make sure I didn't pray with mom. Because it was a long, There was Surah Waqiyah and Surah Mulk. And bless her, those surahs are almost now by heart because of her insistence. The point is, without taking away anything from her, I believe I know more about namaz, which ayats of the Quran talk about namaz. And I believe this new generation of madrasa children that we are bringing up know more about religion than their grandparents. However, all this knowledge did not make our namaz longer. We don't sit on the musalla longer than them. In fact, they were happy to do ibadah for hours. 1 hour, 1.5 hours. We, with all our knowledge and all our intellectual torch that we have brought onto Islam, if we do more than 20 minutes, we feel we are now enough obliging Allah, it's time to go now. It is something to think about. They don't know all that we know, but they knew something deeper, I think. Because they connected in a different way with the religion. They connected with their heart. In those days, it was enough for them to know Rasulullah has said this. And if by Rasul has said this, and because I love him, everything else that comes with it is good. We want to dissect it, see, which part, what is it for us, what is the benefit of it, what is the meaning behind it. And in doing so, I think we kind of make it dead. So it all becomes duty. Where does love go? Well, we haven't connected with heart. And also, when Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, when he was approached by the people, one hadith comes to mind. We'll leave the hadith for another time. Instead, I recite for you an ayah of the Quran. When the people approached Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam and said to him quite genuinely that we want to repay you for the hard work you have done. You have shown us the way to Allah. You have shown us the way to our salvation. If it hadn't been for you, we would still be stumbling about in the dark. You have shown us the worth of a human being. We would like to give you something back. And it was a genuine offer. They wanted to do something for him. He said, I don't want anything. All the prophets before him had been also by genuine Muslims, you know, offered this. In fact, in Surah Al-Shu'ara, which is the 26th surah, we have five prophets mentioned. Nabi Nuh, Nabi Hud, Nabi Saleh, Nabi Lut, and Nabi Shu'ayb. And each of the five were apparently told by their people, we would like to pay you back. Each of the five replied in the same way, and Allah quotes their replies by repeating them. Five identical sets of verses forming the five replies given by these five prophets, who all said that Inni lakum rasulun amin, I am a prophet sent to you, amin, trustworthy. Fattaqullah wa ati'un, the message is clear. All of them had the same message. Observe taqwa of Allah and follow us. We will show you the way. وَمَا أَسْأَلُكُمْ عَلَيْهِ مِنْ أَجْرٍ, we don't want any ajr for this. We don't want any recompense for this. Why? إِنْ أَجْرِيَ إِلَّا عَلَىٰ رَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ, our ajr is from Allah. Now one would expect Rasulullah to say the same thing, because he was at the end of the whole chain of prophets. But Rasulullah is taught by Allah to say something else. And we have this famous verse where he is told, that tell them, this is a sort of shura, not shura, shura, surah 42, ayah 26, 23. قُلْ لَا أَسْأَلُكُمْ عَلَيْهِ أَجْرًا إِلَّا الْمَوَدَّةَ فِي الْقُرْبَةِ, tell them, I don't want any ajr because for this, except, so he wants an ajr, I don't want any recompense, except that you love my Ahlul Bayt. Now, of course he is guided by God to say this, because this is told pull. So, now the question is, he could have, if he was going to ask for something, said that, look, if you really want to pay me back, don't lose sight of the teachings I left behind. Think about the kind of things I talked about. I want you to always remain steadfast on my teachings. I want you to remain true to the Quran. No. Instead, he doesn't ask for an intellectual response, he asks for an emotional one. He doesn't ask for intellectual attachment, he asks for an emotional one. I want you to love my Ahlul Bayt. This is very, very important. He's trying to say that if you love them truly, then ita'ah and obedience will come automatically. You see, when somebody loves, then they respect what that person is saying. They obey that person. Mawadda here is an interesting word. Mawadda is love, but the true flavor of it is sometimes lost in English. Love also is muhabba. To love, habibi, you know, my love. But love, hub is used for all kinds of love. You have hope for money. You can have hope for dunya. You can have hope for power, right? You can never have mawadda for those things. Mawadda you can only have for other human being. You can have hope for an animal, a horse, if you're in England, a dog or a cat. The point is, you can never have mawadda. Mawadda is that kind of love that wants you to change yourself to look like that person, to be like that person. A good word for mawadda is idolating someone. You know, when the kids start you know, having hair like Beckham. Do you know Beckham? No? But I use English metaphors. Who is it? Shaquille O'Neal? that's a long time ago. Anyways, the point is they want to look like these models and superstars and actors and actresses because they idolate them. That, mawadda is a very good word for that. Okay? So now Rasulullah is saying, you want to pay me back? Idolize, not like worship. Make yourselves look and act and behave like my Ahlul Bayt. That way you have paid me back. Now this love in time will transform to obedience, ita'a. And this is something very, very instructive. I think that there is a combination of the two when it comes to commemorating Karbala. Neither one is enough on its own. To sit and only do matam and to say, you know, Bibi will help us. Yes, Bibi will help us. In fact, that is one of the most important traditions we have. We have that on the Day of Judgment, that there will be an announcement made. The whole mahshar will be there, announcement will be made, lower your gaze. And that announcement will not be one that can be defied. Everybody's head will go down, because the daughter of the Prophet is about to pass. And Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. That my grandmother will begin to come, and then she will stand. She is surrounded by 70,000 angels who are escorting her. It will be told to her, O beloved daughter of my beloved Prophet, enter the Jannah. And she will have with her a kurta, or a blood-stained shirt belonging to Hussain. And she will say, Ya Allah, this matter needs to be resolved first. And people will begin to cry. And then she will say, that, Ya Allah, for those who mourned this son of mine and who wept for him, I should like to intercede for them. And then Imam says, just like a bird begins to pick grain from the ground, my grandmother will begin to point at individuals who are standing in mahshar, and each of them she will intercede for them and take them to Jannah with her. Now, this is what fills our heart. This is what gives us. But it is not a free ride. We have to be truthful to ourselves. If we imagine, really, this is so important, that we go to mahshar with nothing, no acts, and then turn up and say, but we wept and we cried. It is not enough, because as I said yesterday, mourning has got a whole series of things that ends with action. We cannot be behijab, be namaz, without anything, you see. And we can still expect that these people intercede. How will they intercede? How can they intercede, actually? I remember in Iran, there was a bank. We don't allow interest in all this. So there was a bank trying to drum up business. So what they did was they said, well, if you open a bank account with us, and you put money into our accounts, you know, every month we'll have a draw, and the winner will get a Mercedes-Benz. Now one man became highly excited when he heard this. So he kept another, he said, Mercedes-Benz, I want one. So he said, and he kept another with Imam Radha alayhi salam. If I win, I will do your ziyarah. He was living in Qum. He said to his wife, I have made a deal with Imam Radha, we're getting a Mercedes. So when he went to look at the result, his name wasn't there. So he decided ziyarah, he said, khair. He thought, how do I put the screws on the Imam? He said, yeah. He said, now, if I win next month, I'm going to come to Mashhad to do Ziyarat. Not Ziyarat from far, but from Mashhad. He told his wife, we're getting a Mercedes, prepare for it. Second month, his name didn't come. So he went to Mashhad Khair. He said, Imam, somehow you're not keeping your side of things better. Now he says to his wife, I've hit on the best idea. He kept another with Imam Raza, I'll come to Mashhad walking. So,